Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. You'll probably be aware at this stage that tonight, after the news on RT1, there's a documentary. It's an hour and a half long. I think it's been 5 years in the making, called Bishop Casey's Buried Secrets. And it's made in conjunction with Anne Sheridan, who's a journalist with the Irish Daily Mail. And indeed, Anne wrote about the allegations, I think it's 4 years ago. And that's the genesis of the programme, but it's a very, very difficult programme in terms of what we already know to put together. And it seems, from what we read, a very, very difficult programme and indeed a series of allegations to listen to. And basically what the programme and indeed Anne Sheridan is saying, and it's that five different people went with allegations of sexual abuse, including child rape. And the child rape, unfortunately, the case involved his own niece, who will be on tonight's programme, giving her first on-air interview. The current Bishop of Limerick said, "I have no reason to disbelieve any of the allegations. Limerick has already paid out $100,000 in compensation to one of the victims, and the Redress Board paid $40,000, according to Anne Sheridan this morning, to another of the victims, and also paid a similar amount in legal fees. One of the victims is now deceased. Two will be identified on tonight's programme. One, as I say, is deceased. Now, Tommy Roddy, there's a number of issues arising from this. Tommy Roddy, Tommy is in Galway. Joe at RT.ie. Tommy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And what was your reaction when you heard these very, very serious allegations, which, according to the Bishop of Limerick and indeed Ian Elliott in the programme, labels Eamon Casey as a sexual predator? What was your reaction when you heard this?
Yeah, well, just over the weekend, I saw the promo for the programme.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I was shocked. I was shocked on two fronts. First of all, because of the allegations, child sexual abuse, number one. And the second one is the fact that the bishop was formally removed from public ministry by the Vatican in 2007, and this was never made public.
Yes.
I mean, that's quite shocking, I think.
And he was removed because of these allegations, though everyone thought, and maybe you can bring us back, everyone thought it had to do with the case in 1992 when a woman called Annie Murphy revealed that she had had a child with the then Bishop of Galway, Bishop Eamon Casey. He tendered his resignation to the Vatican, and then he went on the missions in South America, subsequently came back and worked in the UK, and then retired, we were told, to Ireland in 2007, but still was seen, not on a regular basis, but was seen in clerical garb participating or concelebrating the funeral rites, including the funeral of his sister, who is the mother of the woman who is now saying that Bishop Casey raped her from the age of five upwards. But everyone thought that the reason he was told he couldn't have public ministry or was sanctioned was because of the Annie Murphy case, but it wasn't. It was because of these sexual allegations, but nobody knew.
Yeah, that's the shocking thing about it. My view on Bishop Casey, I've lived in Galway over 40 years, and I remember him at the Novenas in Galway. And he was a very, as we all know, very outgoing man, you know, larger than life type character. And I remember him walking up and down the aisle of the cathedral before the masses, you know, talking to people and being in great spirits. And I suppose that's my abiding memory of him, besides seeing him on television and that kind of thing.
And he was very charismatic, very larger than life,
totally.
A regular on television, be it the Late Late Show or other different reports. Probably the best known bishop in Ireland at the time. Probably the best regarded in terms of his interest in emigrants and social justice and Trocra and various things. And then the bombshell, which is 1992. Now, it's also off its time when he didn't commit a crime. Now, the only crime he did commit is that he took diocesan money to pay for his son's education. But he subsequently, or somebody, within the week of it being discovered, somebody put the 100,000 back in. So that was mute, so to speak. But himself and Annie Murphy were consenting adults at the time. But these allegations are of a completely different nature. These are crimes we're talking about. Yeah. There was a man sent to prison this morning for 13 years for the rape of a 7-year-old. And this case, this woman who will be on this programme tonight, Patricia Dunham, is saying that this bishop raped me from the age of 5 upwards. These are serious crimes. Did you, did you go to his funeral, Tommy, in 2017?
Yeah. Okay. I was just talking to your researcher there, and I just mentioned I'd gone to his funeral. And the reason I went to his funeral was because my view of Bishop Casey was he had an affair with Annie Murphy, mm-hmm. and a child was born out of that relationship. And he left the country then. He was ministering in South America, and then he came back, and he was in England for a while. And in all those years, he sort of drew back from public appearances. The way I saw it was he had been treated harshly by the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
He had gone away. He had done his penance. He had accepted the punishment, if you like, from the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And he had come back, and he was living then in retirement in County Galway in a place called Shenaglish. And even in those years, he was never on the radio or even the local radio or the local papers. You know, he lived out his retirement. And so my view of Bishop Casey was, okay, what he had done, and as you said, he had taken that money at the time from the church. In light of things that happened to other clerics, what other priests did afterwards, I thought, well, in the grand scheme of things, this was very minor. Mm-hmm. So that's why I went to his funeral mass. It was on in the cathedral here in Galway, and I went to the mass. And at the end of the mass, then they brought his coffin down the aisle, and I was on the edge. Edge of the seat, and so I was within just inches of his coffin, and his coffin was brought out then and brought round to the side of the church, and he's buried actually underneath the cathedral in a crypt underneath the cathedral. So that was the reason why I went to his funeral, because the way I saw it was he was, in essence, a good man. Okay, he had made mistakes. We all make mistakes.
But
in the grand scheme of things, this was pretty minor in my view. And, I went there as a show of
Tommy, and you weren't the only one, because remember that all we knew was that Bishop Eamon Casey at the time had a relationship with an adult called Annie Murphy, and the child came of that relationship. He denied the child, as we now know, for a number of years, but then he started funding the child's education, and eventually Annie Murphy went to the newspapers, the Irish Times, in fact, and the story broke. Now, but that was not a crime. And then as the years went by, people were saying, oh, come on, everyone has made mistakes. We lived in a country of squinting windows and people gossiping about each other. People, including on this programme, I hasten to add, Tommy, after Bishop Casey came back to Ireland for his retirement, people were calling. There was a ban on public ministry. Everyone assumed, and nobody disabused us of that notion, everyone assumed it had to do with the Annie Murphy situation, and said that was harsh and let him live out his days, and if he wants to say Mass, he can say Mass, if he wants to, which he did. He did appear in the altar, as it happened. He was apparently told not to. He was told also not to wear clerical garb. There are photographs of him wearing clerical garb, including at his victim's mother's funeral, his sister Patricia Donovan. But everyone thought this was the church being heavy-handed, and the church did not bother to tell people actually the reason why Bishop Eamon Casey is without public ministry as a priest is because there are five credible allegations of a sexual crime against him. They never said this. And as I say, the current bishop says, and I have no reason to disbelieve any of the allegations made. A number of payments have been made to two of the victims. And anyone who's gone through all the documentation, and as I say, it's been I've been hearing about this programme in RTÉ for the last 5 years. They've been working on it. And obviously it's legally fraught, but it's being broadcast tonight and people would be aware from reading about it today and indeed yesterday what is in it. Tommy, by the way, who is allowed to be buried, so to speak, in the vaults of Galway Cathedral? Is that the preserve of bishops in good standing?
I think so. I'm not entirely sure, but as far as I know, there are other bishops who have passed on buried underneath the cathedral.
I presume Michael Brown, the man who built the cathedral. Yeah. Okay, do you think, as I say, this is someone now that's being... I know the man is dead, and I understand that, but the evidence seems to be extraordinarily credible, including as recognised by the Vatican and indeed by the Irish Catholic Church now. Do you think a sexual predator should be buried in the vaults of the Galway Cathedral?
My own opinion is definitely not. You know, you see, what I can't understand about this is why did the Vatican keep it a secret, in essence, the fact that he was removed from public ministry in 2007? I mean, there have been other priests who committed horrendous crimes. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, Brendan Smith.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, those people, I don't know where they are buried or, you know, but when Bishop Casey, his funeral, like, the cathedral was full to capacity at the time, and there would have been photographers there. I remember RTÉ covered it at the time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There would have been, I don't remember offhand, but there would have been some of the local public representatives here in Galway who would have gone to the funeral.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was given what we would call a good send-off. But I know for a fact there is absolutely no way that I would have gone to that funeral if I had known then what I know now. And you were saying about the allegations that Patricia Donovan, who says she was raped by Bishop Casey, like, they have been called, like, credible allegations.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have no reason to doubt from what I have read about her. And, I mean, I remember years ago hearing something about this. There were some allegations of child sexual abuse against Bishop Casey, but then I heard nothing about it afterwards, and I thought, well, you know, kind of there's nothing of it. But this seems to and the fact that the Vatican removed him from public ministry, I mean, they wouldn't do that on a whim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's just as bad. It's almost like the cover-up from the start. Like, why is only this coming out now? Why didn't they say it at the time? Because I'll tell you this, if that had come out at the time in 2007, that cathedral, there would have been a handful of people there, you know. The majority of people who went there in good faith that day, like me, paying their respect to Bishop Casey, who had, in our minds, you know, committed a sin or you know, transgressed or he had failed. We're all guilty of, you know, various faults in our own lives. But, I mean, child sexual abuse is a totally different thing altogether.
His niece, Patricia Donovan, will be saying in the programme tonight that she was raped by the then Bishop Casey when she was five, and that the sexual abuse continued for many years. She told the programme some of the things he did to me and where he did them, the horror of being raped by him when I was just five, the violence, and I was just carried on in that vein. He had no fear of being caught. He thought he could do what he liked, when he liked, how he liked. He was almost like incensed that I would dare fight against him, that I would dare try to hurt him, that I would dare try to stop him. I feel so absolutely and completely and utterly betrayed by the church I was brought up in. The documentary reveals that the Diocese of Galway, where Eamon Casey was bishop from 76 to 92, and where he's now buried in the vaults of the cathedral, they received 5 complaints of childhood sexual abuse against him. I want to bring a stay with us, Tommy. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number. Father Brian Darcy. Brian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. Another litany of sadness and hurt and pain on people. Brian, did you know Eamon Casey?
Yeah, I did know him. I didn't know him very well. He never was particularly fond of me, actually. But I did sit on a few, when I was a young priest, sat on a few committees with him. It was a campaign of prayer throughout Ireland at one time. And I was on that committee and helping publicise it. I was also on, of course, the time in 1979 when the Pope came. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of meetings with the various people at that stage, and he was certainly one of them. Of course, Michael Cleary, too, would have been highly involved in all of that. So, yeah, I knew him, not terribly well, but I did know him because, as I say, he didn't particularly like me, but that's a whole lot of people don't particularly like me. And it doesn't worry me one bit. I knew that from, he was a very good friend of Mick Cleary's, and I was a friend of Mick's as well at that stage. So Mick would tell me that he didn't particularly like me, but it didn't affect his working together in any way at all, no.
Okay, and what did you, again, to remind people, because it is so long ago, that the figure that he was in the Irish church, in the Irish hierarchy, he was monumental, wasn't he?
Not only the Irish church, but I think the English church as well, to be quite honest. He worked very well in founding housing organisations for the Irish and for other people, some of which are still running at this particular time. He was a man who got things done, and even on the committees I worked with him, I would know that. He was decisive and was in charge, you know, very much. He was a good chair of that sort of thing. Maybe that was not his best gift either. Sometimes our best gift is our greatest fault, and that we don't listen to people a lot if we want to be terribly decisive all the time. And he certainly would have erred, if anything, on that side of you know, he had an opinion to do it, and that was the opinion that went with it. That was my experience. That was my experience with it. But I had great, on my own level, I had great respect for what he was able to do, how he was able to communicate. He was a very strong man in the Irish church. You know, he sang songs in the late, and Gay and himself were always seemed to get on very well, and he was on that level a very good, if you like it, a very good performer at that level, and it was helpful to many of the churches at that stage, because Ireland was going through that kind of thing where, you know, the clerics were, as you remember yourself, they were show business people, who, you know, the priest show, the all priest show, and other sorts of priest shows. They were very popular and very big at the time, and it was looked upon as the way to be part of the community rather than to be above the community. It always struck me as a little unusual, though, that, you know, everybody had to be a star at that stage, and not enough of them, in my view, wanted to work with the people on the ground, like Peter McVerry, for example, say.
And then when the Annie Casey story broke in 92,
Annie Murphy,
my fault, sorry. He was exposed on one hand as a thief because he took the money. Now, the money was returned when it was discovered the money was missing. It was returned apparently within a week thanks to a donor or whatever. He had abandoned his son. Annie Murphy, in her book, it says, and describes how she was a highly vulnerable young woman. She'd been recently divorced and was sent to Ireland. She was a distant relation of his and was sent to Ireland for care and protection and recovery from the trauma. And he ended up in a sexual relationship with her, which he, according to her book, and that's she said repeated in the late, he initiated a sexual relationship one night. He appeared in her bedroom, and that was the beginning. So he had this he was taking advantage of a vulnerable woman. Now, we're now into it, and that stands where it stands. We're now into a completely different realm. He's been described by Ian Elliott, who we know as a sexual predator. The Archbishop of Limerick says the allegations are, I've no reason to disbelieve the allegations. The Vatican's are now saying in a statement, he was publicly requested not to exercise his ministry before 2006. This was reiterated in 2007. And he was never reinstated in the following years, in spite of insistence from him and on his behalf. This was regardless of the outcome of the civil procedures. The allegations regarding Bishop Casey were received by the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith in 2000, which is in Rome, obviously, in 2006. This led to no civil prosecution or subsequent legal action against the bishop. When further allegations were produced in 2015, Bishop Casey, that's how they refer to him, was already suffering from various physical and mental problems. These were of a type that would have rendered his defence difficult. The funeral rites and burial were requested by the bishop's family and some of the faithful of the Diocese of Galway, and the Congregation for Bishops left decisions in this regard to local level. And the Vatican add, I don't know if they were asked or not, but they do add, the Papal Nuncio, who I think was Charlie Brown at the time, the Papal Nuncio was not present for the funeral and burial. So that was obviously a statement that were of intent that we were, I don't know if people spotted that at the time. So the Vatican knew in 2006, Brian.
Yeah, this is, I get really, really angry with all of this now, because, you know, first of all, I'm thinking of all the people that are not being talked about today, namely the victims and their families, and how they have been affected for that during their life. You know, I'm in one sense, I'm not a bit worried where Eamon Casey is buried or not buried.
Okay. I think
that's a minor issue, to be honest with you.
Okay. But
what I really am thinking of is how must those poor people that were abused by him over many years, how are they feeling now? How are they feeling when all of this was a secret and he was still kept this way? I mean, we have a quite recent example of how the Vatican can act in these places. And in recent times, is Cardinal McCarrick in America, who was publicly defrocked, just, and there was no point or issue about it. It came out in the public, and that was, even though he was a huge man for raising huge amounts of money for a lot of people, extremely influential man, civically and in religious terms. It didn't matter. Once it became clear that he had been abusing people up to clerical students. And indeed, once that became public, then the Pope defrocked him immediately, and that's the way it ended, and he could not possibly perform in any way in public. Now, I think that if the Vatican knew this about Eamon Casey and he was still alive, I just think he should have been publicly defrocked. It's the way that he should, that the rest of the community was, should have been protected by him and from him, and it is possible to do that, and it's possible to laicize people so that there is no possibility of them performing in a priestly role. Now, I think for the protection of other people, that should have been done. And I don't blame Eamon Casey for this or anybody. I blame the authorities here and in Rome, because the most important thing to protect is the victims and survivors. They must be protected and looked after. The second most important thing is to ensure that, insofar as possible, a person who abuses children is prevented from doing that, and letting them remain in a position of clericalism, whether publicly or privately, is one way of ensuring that they have a certain influence on vulnerable people that they shouldn't have.
And I'll also point out that Ian Elliott, who has direct knowledge of Patricia Donovan's complaint against Eamon Casey, told the investigation that he found, and he was the church-appointed safeguard expert. He was by the Catholic Church.
Yes, a very good one too.
And he would have had it even from his previous role in a different organisation. He told the investigation that he found Patricia's account of what she experienced entirely credible. Now, Eamon, Brian, just that position, you said that it's irrelevant to you, and I know the context, so that stands, that context stands, what you said about the victim, so that stands above any question now I'm going to ask about the burial. I'll go to Tommy first. Tommy, do you remember who officiated at Eamon Casey's funeral in Galway Cathedral?
Was there
a bishop?
I don't know. Funny enough, I actually don't. I've just a vague memory that there would have been a good few priests on the altar, but I don't actually remember who officiated.
Yeah, because, okay, stay with us. Because, Brian, I want to ask you to think about that question, because a lot of victims, as we know over the years, do maintain their faith, and they do worship.
Yes.
And if a victim of Eamon Casey was to go to the premier, whatever the phrase is, and that dies, the premier church built, as you know, by Michael Brown back in the 60s.
The cathedral church.
The cathedral church in the diocese. They go to that church and they realise they're standing over the remains of someone who abused them, who has been revered in the church. And he's so revered that he's one of the few people that is buried in the vaults of the cathedral.
Yeah, that is a problem. I have no doubt about that. That is a problem. And it's a problem of, you know, that does anybody own the abuse that this person has already done? And is there any way that we can possibly overcome it? But then again, if he had been properly defrocked and bishoped, as it were, and laicized by the Vatican, it couldn't have happened that he'd be buried there. Mm-hmm. And there's the point I'm making, that it wasn't handled the proper way. There'd be no way that, for example, Cardinal McCarrick, he was removed from being a cardinal, obviously, and from being a bishop and from being a priest, all in the one go. There is no way that he would be buried in a cathedral. You know, there's no, and you know, as I say, the last thing I will say, I know you have to go to a break, but I would also say that, you know, everybody has to go through their own judgment. And I'm one of those who believe that God will judge us at the end of the day. And a funeral mass is essentially and primarily to pray for the forgiveness of the sins that we have all committed during life. And it's the forgiveness, to pray for the forgiveness of the sinner. So I don't have a problem with somebody saying a mass, and indeed I suppose we all should say a prayer that person will be forgiven and a merciful God will. Leave the judgment about abuse, that kind of a to God. But there is two things that we should say here. We do not want to add to the abuse of the victims in any way. That's the first thing. The second thing, I think we also should say that this is a matter for criminal law, not just church law.
Okay. Apparently it was Bishop Kelly, who was the acting Bishop of Galway at the time. The then Bishop Martin Drennan had retired, and in one sense it was an interregnum period. Martin Drennan, from my understanding, was aware of the sanctions on Eamon Casey, but Bishop Kelly, when he preached and celebrated the funeral mass of Eamon Casey, according to the diocese, would not have known what was in their record. Stay with us. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We're talking about these very serious allegations made against the former Bishop of Galway, now deceased Bishop Eamon Casey, known to so many people of a certain age in this country. 1992, it was revealed by the mother of his child, Annie Murphy, that they had a child together, and he was bishop then of Galway, and the phrase was that he fled the country. He tendered his resignation to the Vatican as Bishop of Galway, and then he was sent on the missions, which was to South America. Then he came back to minister in the UK, and then he came back and retired in Ireland. We're now discovering that there were at least five allegations of child sex abuse made against Bishop Eamon Casey, that the allegations were regarded as credible by the Vatican, and the Vatican indeed in 2006 stripped him of his public ministry. Now, you heard Brian D'Arcy saying they should have gone much, much further. But they stripped him of his public ministry, but they didn't tell anyone why. And everyone in Ireland thought that this was because of the relationship with Annie Murphy. And as time went on, people were becoming more sympathetic to somebody committing this sin of the flesh. And the story was, oh, he's not the first one. But now, as I say, the allegations are on a different plane altogether. Different. They're now crimes. They are actually crimes. By the way, this is Anne Sheridan. She was talking to, who's been working on this story and is part of the programme tonight made by the Religious Affairs Department of RTE under Roger Childs. This is Anne Sheridan talking about the force allegation.
The very first allegation of abuse was sent from the Diocese of Limerick in 2001 to the Diocese of Arundel and Brighton. That went missing at that time. They say they can't offer any explanation as to how that record was lost. But at that time, if that complaint had been appropriately received and handled, he would have been suspended from all work.
Okay, it has everything in it: lies, sex, theft, money. It's and disappearing files, Brian.
That's incredible there. But of course, I think that Diocese of Brighton and Arundel had its own problems at the time because the bishop at that stage had to resign because of an alleged affair. With two women. And he resigned. I think he had an Irish name, too. My memory is that. But I know that that diocese itself would have been in some upheaval because the bishop himself was undergoing investigations at that time.
And I don't know whether
not criminal investigations. Okay, not criminal investigations. Just relationship investigations.
I don't know whether you read Terry Prone's column in today's Examiner, her weekly column. It is about Eamon Casey, but she tells this, which I think she says herself, is a bizarre story, but she was working for the Catholic Communications Centre. You remember that,
yes,
Brian?
And I remember Dean worked with her.
Yeah, okay. And she was working there, and one day, Eamon Casey arrived. I haven't got it in front of me, unfortunately. I'll get it in a sec, I hope. One day, I read it yesterday evening, one day he arrived in the in the Catholic Communications as a bishop, and he swept in, she said, and he demanded tea and biscuits and was the belle of the ball, so to speak. And a priest working there at the time, Father Tom Savage, who, as we know, Terry Prawn subsequently married, and actually, among other things, was director, was chairman of the RTE Authority. But she said Tom Savage stepped outside when Eamon Casey arrived. And she went out into the grounds, and Tom was walking around. I presume she didn't know him that well at that stage. And she said, why did you step outside? And he says, I don't like Casey, and Casey doesn't like me. And Terry said, just familiar ring to this, Brian, but it gets murkier. Terry says in her column that Tom Savage, who was also a sociologist, as you know, he had written... Yeah, he had written, he had written a thesis on Irish emigrants in the UK, and he submitted it to the Irish hierarchy, and basically Eamon Casey plagiarised it and claimed it as his own subsequently. And he was deep. I know in the litany of crimes. In the litany of crimes that Eamon Casey is now accused of, that's not the biggest. But it is an indication that he was a priest telling somebody who was working for the Catholic Communications Institute that this bishop actually plagiarised my paper on emigrants in the UK. And he's never accepted the wrong of the authorship of it. Yeah, but anyway, it's just another...
That's a fascinating story. I never heard that. No. Yeah. I knew both Terry, as you know, Terry and Tom well. If it came down to an issue, I think at any stage between believing Tom or believing Eamon, I think I would believe Tom, to be honest.
Yeah. Tommy Roddy, Brian is saying... where someone is now, don't let me misquote you, Brian. Brian is saying that where someone is buried isn't of itself Brian is not going to lose any sleep over that because he's thinking of the victims, and he has been for every time these issues come up. Tommy, do you think he should be removed from Galway Cathedral, his remains?
I understand Father Brian's context and the way he said it, but my own opinion is that definitely he should not be there. You know, mm-hmm.
I would agree with that, Tom. I would agree with that. And he wouldn't have been there, that's the point he was making, if the Vatican had done his job properly. And, I mean, you said, Joe, something there that frightened me before the break. You said that the bishop who buried him didn't know that he was a sexual abuser.
Yes. Brandon.
I think that's incredible. I just think that's incredible.
He was Bishop of Achonroy at the time, and obviously the Bishop of Galway had retired. So obviously, as happens, bishops cover different areas. Eamon Casey dies. Yes. There was a campaign for a funeral or whatever in Galway Cathedral, in the premier, so to speak, flagship church in the diocese. He got that. Bishop Kelly presided, I presume gave a eulogy, I don't know, but he was unaware of the file in Galway about the alleged crimes, as they were then, of Eamon Casey. And I presume the previous bishop would have been aware, but he had retired.
Nobody told him.
Earlier, Joe, about the people who were in the cathedral that day of his funeral, the cathedral was full to capacity. People would have had any idea about this.
Okay.
And I'd imagine the vast majority of, practically all of them, if they had known this, they certainly would not have been there. And as I said earlier on, what's incredible about the whole story is the fact, as we've been discussing, that he was formally removed from public ministry by the Vatican in 2007, and this was never made public. That is an absolute disgrace, in my view.
Yeah, I'm not too sure, even Tommy, that it wasn't made public. You're probably right in saying that it wasn't made public that way. But I mean, if anybody is comes under the watchful eye of the Rome at that stage, and there's something against them, and a bishop was looked upon as an even greater crime, that if he was, it was made very public that he was not coming back to do any ministry. Now, you see, how there's a whole heap of things here in this now. How are the people of Mexico going to take this? That a man was sent to them and was an abuser and they didn't know it. How are the people in the English diocese where he worked, how are they going to feel now that they, as far as I know, Kieran O'Toole would not accept him to work in his place, how are they going to feel? And what's more, how can you say that you're following any safeguarding proceedings in any normal way if you're letting a man with verified accusations against him be in public ministry and open to doing the same things again? I just think that's horrendous.
But I never remember in all my years in Galway hearing any kind of public sanction by the Vatican. My understanding was he had gone to South America, he had been in England, he came back, he was living in Shanaglish in County Galway, living out his retirement, and I never heard anything that he was told that he should not be ministering in public. You know, that is news to me, and as I said, to me it's actually shocking the fact that this maybe some people knew about this, but I certainly didn't know about it, and I believe the vast majority of people in Galway and Ireland knew nothing about it. As far as I'm concerned, he was living out his retirement, and you know, then he was giving this public funeral that, you know, a lot of people attended. And
including, I hasten to add, the President of Ireland and Sabine Uachtaráin there, Michael D. Higgins, was there in official capacity. I see from images people are sending me in now that there was at least 10 red hats. I see there the bishop's hats. There was at least on the altar. I don't know. Pauline, do you remember, you say, how many bishops celebrated the funeral mass for Eamon Casey in Galway Cathedral?
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks.
11 bishops and 61 priests. When you were talking to Father Brian, I Googled to see what it said about the funeral. And there's a photograph as well, Joe, of the bishops processing up the centre of the cathedral.
Okay.
Now, tell me all of those bishops were innocent and knew nothing about the Eamon Casey. It's unbelievable that he got such a funeral. And I'm speaking to you as a mother and a grandmother of young children. And I have great respect for our clergy. There are some absolutely wonderful priests that we deal with here in my parish. And yes, this is what happened, whatever, 7 years ago.
Yeah, nobody. Well, as I say, I'm looking, and thanks for alerting us to this footage. Mm. And people can get it on YouTube. Just look, just Google, or just put in funeral of Bishop Eamon Casey. You can see the cathedral, beautiful cathedral.
It's packed.
I'd say there must be 60 priests. You say 11 bishops. And
11 bishops.
And representatives of the state. Now, how would Michael D. Higgins wouldn't know, obviously, of the work of the Vatican. But we presume, well, we can't presume. Did is a question to be asked. Apparently, the programme say we checked with Ecuador, which you mentioned there, Brian, rightly so, and there's no records of any complaints against Eamon Casey there. The same in Arundel and Brighton. And he had previously, in his work with the homeless and the Irish diaspora, was in the Diocese of Westminster. The programme asked them, was there any records of complaints there? And that diocese declined to comment. They declined to comment. Okay.
That's noteworthy in itself, I think.
Just to go back to that Terry Brown piece, I have the actual wording here. Tom Savage, when I asked him why he left the room or the building with Eamon Casey, Tom Savage replies, because he stole my scholarship and passed it off as his own. Savage had, he told me, a graduate degree in sociology from Queen's in Belfast, having been the first Roman Catholic priest to attend the university. He had done research work in London into homelessness, and because the church powers that were knew about this, they referred Father Eamon Casey, as he was at the time, to him, since he was told Casey was also interested in this area. Tom Savage gave him a copy of his unpublished thesis, and a few months later found himself reading about the groundbreaking work on the issue done by the Kerryman, obviously Eamon Casey, not the newspaper, but Eamon Casey. His original research had been claimed by Casey, who had no sociological background. It was no more, as far as Tom was concerned, and you described Tom's gentle personality. As far as Tom Savage was concerned, it was no more than a minor incident. But as Terry Prone says, his widow, in retrospect and in a wider context established by the RTMOS documentary, it is more significant, revealing that a key element in Casey's carefully structured public persona was false. His scholarship was stolen. His accessibility, meaning his attributed ability not to get bogged down in that scholarship, was consequently false. Casey's life was a continuum of lies, thefts and sex crimes.
Joe, there's one other thing there, can add. When I was talking to your researcher, I mentioned how Veronica Guerin had tracked him down in South America.
That's right,
and managed to do an interview with him. So I actually just Googled Bishop Casey and Veronica Guerin, and there's a very good article from March the 15th, 2017 in the Irish Independent, and Jimmy Guerin, Veronica's brother, in it is interviewed, and he's saying that the bishop and Veronica got on very well, and they actually formed a friendship, and sometime afterwards, Veronica was picking up an award in New York, and Bishop Eamon Casey flew up from South America to spend a few days with him, and that this friendship had actually continued. And you're talking about a web of deceit.
Brian, to come back to that point, Pauline pointed out there, the funeral and the huge attendance and the concelebratory nature of it. Do you think he should be buried in that cathedral?
If he's buried, he is buried in it, whether he should or shouldn't, that's where he is. But what I'm saying is, I don't think that if the Vatican had done their job properly, I don't think there would have been any bishops there. I don't think there would have been. There is actually a ritual for sex abusing priests, and it's a very strict ritual. for their funeral.
I didn't know that.
And that is the
What is the difference in that ritual, Brian?
Well, the ritual is that, you know, that there is no lauding the person's life or making sure that and who should attend, and it should be a quiet funeral and possibly not even a public funeral, like my memory is. And there is one for that. But what I'm saying is, can you imagine two things? If you were a bishop or the president attending that and nobody had told you about you were actually attending, because all of us were forgiving of the Annie Murphy thing, because we blamed him for misusing a vulnerable person. Yes, that's absolutely so. But even at the time of towards the end of his life, there were many people writing to me saying, why shouldn't you start a campaign that Bishop Casey should be restored to some sort of ministry? And they were saying, why are sex abusers allowed to say mass and he isn't, you know? And so they were saying that compared to sex abuse, his original sex abuse of children, his original misdemeanor with Annie Murphy was a minor one, and we'd have been very happy if McCleary and Eamon Casey were the only two sinners in the church, compared to what happened afterwards, that the abuse of children, the cover up, and all of that, and many of us believed that, thinking that it was only the affair with Annie Murphy that he was being punished for. Now, it is just frightening to think that the Vatican did not do something about a sex abuser. And how was that? How would you, if you were abused by Eamon Casey, or indeed by any other priest, how would you feel that this is how they bury sex abusers? How would you feel about that if the Vatican knew that and didn't stop it? So I just think it's a terrible, terrible condemnation of how Rome deals with cases. And I'm not sure how bishops knew that.
What Rome did, because the Vatican made a point, they weren't asked about it. Yes. The last line in that Vatican statement, they added the line, the papal nuncio at the time. That's the last line. The papal nuncio, the papal nuncio was not present for the funeral and burial, but the president of Ireland was, and they never told him.
Yeah, precisely.
Now, Brian, just finally on the issue, another pillar of our faith is atonement. And would it not be a sign of atonement on the part of the church if they removed him from the vaults?
Well, you know, I would let them have that discussion. I'm thinking of the family here as well, and what they're going through at this particular time. And obviously there would be divisions within the family because of the abuse of one of his own relatives. And there would be division. So we have to, I don't know enough to actually make a statement on that. But I will. What I want to say is, let's think about the victims today.
Yeah.
Let's think about them and what they're going through and how they're feeling about all of this and how their families are going through and how possibly the spouses of them who have lived with somebody living through a living hell of trying to recover from abuse, how they're feeling this way.
As I say, one of them is named, one is deceased, three are not named. And Patricia Donovan, we're thinking of her today.
And I can be quite certain if there's that many, there's more.
Okay. Father Brian D'Arcy, Gooder Míle Maith, and Tommy Roddy in Galway. Joe at RT.ie. But his niece is part of, Patricia is, as Brian said, Patricia is part of that family. And that's how he had access to her when she was 5 years of age. Oh, my God. Joe at RT.ie. Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Tommy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I know people are saying Eamon Casey died, he was never charged. But remember, the Vatican, as Brian D'Arcy lit on and was the, apart from his concern for victims, was his main point, that the Vatican knew in 2006 that there have been credible allegations of sexual crimes against Eamon Casey, and they didn't tell the public. And maybe if they did tell the public at that time, other issues might have had Eamon Casey lived for a further 10 years, might have arisen. 51551, Joe at RT.ie. Ruth Walsh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Yeah, my thoughts are with Peter Murphy today, of course, called after his mother. And what he went through...
This is Eamon Casey and Annie Murphy's son.
His son, yeah. Now, that, of course, we know the great revelation in 1992. But what my understanding was, so whenever Eamon Casey had contact with the mother, he would have avoided speaking for a long, long time to his own son. Now, I know that was finally, you know, reconciled and they did have some form of relationship. But it's a hard thing for this young man to live with now today.
Remember, Peter did visit his father in the nursing home before he died. Now, I think at that stage, it was close to Eamon Casey dying, so he wasn't well on a number of fronts, unfortunately.
And I mean, one has to be, you know, even for someone who has done evil acts, you know, you don't deprive them of care at the end. Otherwise, you know, we descend into complete. But, I mean, what I'm saying is, though, it must be a hard thing for him to now have this additional information about his cousin. It's his cousin, after all.
And that his father was abusing his cousin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So let's just keep that central thing.
That's very,
you know.
Well worth remarking.
You know, so we were a society of huge secrets, not unique to Ireland, it was going on in other countries as well. But we had this, I think because partly that Irish people are like to think well of people too, you know, and then he had this larger than life personality.
Yeah, explain, can you give that picture to listeners?
Well, I'll give it to you from the one thing I know about him is that my parents in the Stowell were the only ordination they were ever invited to was McNamara, who replaced him when he went off to Galway.
Kevin McNamara,
Kevin McNamara. Of course, nobody knew why he had gone to Galway. You know, that was all. Again, people didn't laugh. And,
because the Annie Murphy relationship took place when he was Bishop of Kerry and the house he was
Exactly. Well, he, as an interesting point, actually, a small point, he never lived in the palace. He broke protocol by not living in the palace, which was next door to the cathedral. Okay. Now, I don't blame him for that because I, you know, saw it there in the last couple of years and, God, you were practically on top of the cathedral, you know, so he would have had no privacy. And, I mean, everybody's entitled to privacy. So that's why he lived out an inch to get away from being, you know, on display or practically in Killarney. But anyway, that aside, he disappeared off to Galway. And then Kevin McNamara, as you say, went on to become the Bishop of Kerry. And my parents went over to that. And it were afterwards Dublin. Mm. And then he, you know, came back from Galway, walked down the cathedral, throwing the hands in the air, saluting right, left and centre. And the priest who was with my parents, who was a pal of theirs, said dryly, "There's Eamon trying not to steal the show." You know, so that was the larger than life character. My parents didn't like him.
But he was a regular radio, television.
Yeah,
a bit there'd always be a bit of a sing song. He'd always tell a story. He was in every sense, every sense larger than.
Well, you know the famous remark that Gay Byrne made, who normally was a super broadcaster.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that mistake of him saying to Annie Murphy, "If he's half the man his father was," and she said, "I'm not half so bad either." Yeah. And after all, she reared him. It wasn't him.
Yeah.
You know, and so what I'm saying is, you know, this notion of being belonging to everybody can often be a problematic thing as well. Now, I know this is a side issue. You mentioned Terry Prone earlier.
Yeah.
But Terry Prone represented the Bon Secours nuns, who said there was no truth in the rumour about you. And, you know, so that's more of you know, we just... there seems to be no end to us having to face up to horrific stuff.
But,
Daniel, to go back to Peter, you know, think of the family today, and the, you know, they must be.
And there's other
clenched.
I presume, and there's other. There's, I take a point. Peter is Eamon Casey's son. He's thinking his father abused someone known to him, who in effect is Peter's cousin. There's other extended cousins as well. Thanks indeed, Ruth. Ruth Walsh. Una Heaton, your point, please, Una.
Hi, Joe. Sorry, I'm not coming across as a holier than thou person.
Yeah, okay.
I just feel that I know I have to be sensitive to his family and his son, but I do feel that it'd be a great message to the victims of Bishop Casey in Small Bishop, inverted commas, that he be reinterred, exhumed from the grave in the cathedral in Galway, and reinterred in the family plot somewhere in Kerry, because I think it'd be a great message, strong message to the people. And I feel it's totally wrong of what's going on, you know, and what went on.
Now, remember, and Brian D'Arcy alluded to it, I remember that, as he said there, if it had been known, well, it was known to the church. Sorry. It was known to the church. It was known to, I don't know, the individuals on that day that were participating or celebrating. But it was known to the church. And he said there was a certain ritual for people who had. Now, he had nothing proved against him. This was the other thing. Now, maybe the reason he had nothing proved against him, as I say earlier, is because nobody knew there had already been allegations against him while he was alive. The Vatican or the church in Ireland and the Vatican decided not to tell anybody. Which is par for their course at the time, anyway, until the likes of Dermot Martin came along, who changed that culture immediately and conclusively. But that was a culture before the people like Eamon Martin and indeed Dermot Martin came along. So there was nothing proved against him until the day he did.
And he was a church man. I mean, how does that not prove against him?
I know.
The man was taking vow of celibacy and he causes a child. Isn't that hypocritical?
Yeah. Yeah, well, apart from whatever about celibacy, to break your vow of celibacy is not a crime. To abuse a 5-year-old child is, as I said, there's a man gone to prison this morning for 13 years for raping a 7-year-old, my God. And but Una, the other thing as well, like the other funeral that people might remember was Brendan Smith, of the Norbertine Order, and he had been sent to prison, he had been found guilty, but he was buried in he was buried in the dead of night up in Killinacrot without any ritual, and that was that was, but anyway, Eamon Casey is in the lauded vaults of Galway Cathedral. Una Gurumila Malgad, August Ruth.
Thank you.
Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715
815. Joe at rt.ie 51551. Text Eddie, you're listening to this discussion about, and the programme's on at 9:30 tonight. About Bishop Eamon Casey and allegations of sexual crimes against him. You worked in Galway.
When the first regional tech was being built.
Okay.
The only part of the Galway, the
RTC,
university. We were from Dublin and we worked down there, myself and my dad. And we would say every second weekend, save money and make money.
Okay.
So what we would do is we would go and work on Sunday.
Okay.
But we were told we had to sneak in that you're not supposed to work on Sunday by order of the bishop.
It was
on any building that had any relationship to the government or schools or anything like that.
So
but that's what we had to do. We had to sneak in. We couldn't drive up.
Okay, and the drive from Dublin to Galway down was a long, long drive.
I know, we were living there.
Like, yeah, but I mean, you used to come home at the weekend and every second weekend you wouldn't go home, so you'd try and work, obviously, to try and make a few bob. And you were banned from working on a Sunday by the bishop.
Yes. But we used to sneak in anyway. We wouldn't drive up to the job, we'd walk. And we tell the foreman which door to leave open, he would make his mind.
Okay. And Eddie, did you ever meet Eamon Casey? I did a few times.
Not
did you ever
all,
meet
no,
him?
No. No, thankfully.
He was larger than life, and he was. Now, I remember one, he was on the altar in 1979, and I've talked about this before, and I was asked, I was president of Trinity Students Union at the time, I think it was because of my accent or to have a go at Trinity, but I don't know what they were up to. But I was asked to do one of the readings at the Papal Mass in 1979, and the two of the other people on the altar at the time, though I can't remember speaking to them, was Eamon Casey and Michael Cleary, who I would have known from Ballyfermot. And it now transpires, by the way, that Michael Cleary knew about the likes of Tony Walsh, who's currently in prison, one of the most prolific child sex abusers. Michael Cleary knew about it before he was, before Tony Walsh was convicted. And remember, the accusation against Michael Cleary was similar to the first accusation against Eamon Casey, and that is he had fathered the child. But this arose after Michael Cleary had died. So I understand the arguments that ensued from that. But Eamon Casey, and then I remember I was in Galway doing a programme, and I was walking around by the quays, and he came around the corner, and I stopped, and as I normally do, I said, I was not known even to myself at that stage, I wasn't even and I remember just stopping him, saying, Bishop Casey, Joe Duffy's my name, just saying hello, and he a quick handshake, and he ran. Now, not, I just presume he was busy, but I never had any dealings with him. But these revelations are just shocking beyond belief. They really are, and they're not beyond belief.
At that time, anyone in the religious had so much power. Like, I was a kid in the Christian Brothers, they used to beat the hell out of us.
Yeah.
And talking to many years later, like we actually said we were so lucky they could only beat us during the day. They didn't have us at night time like they had in some of the reform schools.
Yeah.
You know? It was a terrible time for lots of people,
Eddie, thanks indeed.
I'll be watching it later on, anyway.
Yes, and a half nine. Joe at RT and RT One Television. Joe at RT.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And remember, next Friday week, we are in the Dolman Hotel in Carlow with Funny Friday for the bank holiday weekend, with all the usual lineup. And you're all welcome, and it's absolutely free, and hopefully loads of giveaways as well, but above all, loads of entertainment. Over the weekend, this glitch, as they call it, or the Microsoft collapse on Friday, seemed to have a much bigger impact in abroad than it did in Ireland. But anyway, maybe that's our demeanour. And a number of people were asking at the weekend, should we pack things, get things ready if our phones go, if our electricity goes, if our landlines go? And Frank Deegan. Frank, what's the name of your organisation?
Joe, how are you doing?
Good.
We are the Irish Survivalist and Prepper Group.
The Irish Survivalist and Prepper. As in preparation.
Prepared.
Okay. Yes. And are you prepared?
We are, sure. This is something that we said could happen over the years, and sure, there we go, it proves it. It happened on a small scale. I had my own, my bank account, my wages wasn't paid into my account. I got an email from the company saying there's something going on with the internet and we can't pay it, but it was all manually paid into on Friday. So that's the only thing that affected me.
Okay, but as you can see, I don't know whether you saw any of the foreign papers. Like, it was a lead story in the UK, Australia, the USA, and all those. It was a lead story in I know it's a lead story here, but the impact in the UK seemed to be hospitals, GPs. In the US, there was police departments, fire departments, 911, as well as hospitals.
Australia, where the shopping centres, they couldn't pay for groceries, whatever, they all locked up to pay for.
Okay.
Nobody had money.
So do you have a bag?
Okay, so basically what we have is kind of grab bag, and this one is kind of for an overall emergency in any event.
Okay.
So say you're home and your house was about to go burn down. What are you going to grab in the next couple of minutes? That is essential that you need to have. You know, what are you going to grab? Your personal belongings. Well,
don't grab anything. Just get out.
Right. Well, we have a bag ready and waiting with all of our equipment, you know, with all of our grab stuff. So photocopies of birth certificates, death certificates, marriage, passports, bank accounts, mortgage, all of that kind of stuff. You can have them on USB or photocopy them, but have them at hand in bags ready to go.
Okay.
Also, you'd have in them bags. So this is just one scenario where your house is burnt down or burning. You're out in the middle of nowhere. It's lashing rain, as usual. So you're out in the rain. So we'd have maybe a tarp or some kind of cover to get out of the elements.
Okay.
Sleeping bags or small body warmers that you could use just to keep yourself warm, because it is summer in Ireland and we're freezing. So water, a small amount of food and water just for a couple of days. For the amount of people that they have. So we're only talking a bare essential bag.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
It's like a first aid kit. Just to cover the cuts and bruises, but the bag will cover you for a little while.
What's the plan if the mobile phones go down? Do you have a transistor?
We have radios, but we have ham radios as well. So we have a network of repeaters. There is a repeater network in the country, and it is fantastic. You could talk. I heard one guy talking in the bed in Letterkenny. He was in the hospital in Letterkenny. Talked to a guy in Cork using the repeaters on a handheld walkie-talkie, which I thought was all. I didn't think it existed until I actually heard it myself.
Okay. And
so some lads are into that sort of hobby. It's a great hobby to be into.
Okay. Well, what about should I have a transistor with batteries, spare batteries?
Absolutely. And also, if you don't have one with batteries, you can buy the ones with wind up as well. So
that's true.
You'll always have. The wind up with a torch, the emergency ones.
You can get a wind up torch. You can get a wind up radio with a wind up torch built in.
Yes, We have all of that kind of stuff that we test and use, and we discuss amongst ourselves as well.
Now, even in terms of bartering, the number of people now don't carry any cash, including myself. And gets me into trouble every now and again. But should you always have some cash? In that you've
raised. I always have cash, but I always have cash at home as well. So the other day when people were going through with their shopping trolleys, it wasn't until they offered their card for payment they were told, sorry, the machines are down. Everybody stopped. This is in Australia. There was a thing on the radio about it. Cash, I mean, it's king. If we lose cash in this country, we're screwed. I think we're absolutely screwed, because there's no going back to this. If the electric went off as well for the week, and then we have no internet and no electric and whatever, we're getting really
The electric is gone. Do you have a little Primus stove with methylated spirits?
Our house now, my house is, we're out there 25 years, and since day one we've had a gas oven, a gas cooker and an electric oven. We have solar now, which is brilliant. We have a little generator at the back. I've got extra power banks that I use when we go camping as well, so it'll power everything, TVs, videos, you name it, it'll power it up, charge everybody's phones. We try to test everything out.
What about food? Cup of soup? What do you put in your bag?
Well, we have freeze-dried food. This is what the mountaineers use, because it's light and it lasts for 10 or 20 years. The army uses it as well. So we use freeze-dried, and then there's all kinds of recipes that are made for long-lasting, long shelf life food. Most tins of salmon you don't realize will last 5 years plus. You know, on the shelf.
Okay.
Well, to be okay, they're better than nothing. But
what about
beans and rice? You know,
what about dried food?
The dried food is great. It's we dehydrate it and then it's freeze dried as well. But the machinery for that is very expensive. So buying the dried food, the freeze dried. I buy a lot of stuff from Germany, which is great. In England, are starting to sell it out now as well. Ex-army stuff.
Do you mind me asking you, Frank? How did you get involved in this? How did you suddenly decide that you wanted to be prepped?
I'm ex-Navy, so back in the 90s, we kind of ran out of food and water on one of the ships we were delivering.
Okay.
Not because of any fault of our own, but we just happened to hit the war zone, Yugoslavia. Was kicking off at that time,
right?
And we came into the war zone, so we couldn't get over for a couple of weeks. But we ran out of food and water because the ship was a delivery ship and wasn't designed for long term staying. But after that, then I was into sailing a lot. So for any long extended trips, I think most sailors would know what I'm talking about. Is small amount of space, but you have to have maximum calories in your food. So
Okay.
You did a bit of research into that. And you just start creeping into that, and you move on to the next category.
And somebody pointed, did you know you could buy a wind-up water filter, Frank?
Why wind-up water filter? Go on, tell me. How
no, just
work?
I just see a text in there saying you can buy a wind-up. Well, we'll find out more. What can
I
you
think
buy?
Somebody's winding this up. No. No, the water filters are great. Charcoal filters.
Okay, well said. Well said. Okay, any ideas, I'll welcome joe@rte.ie. Frank Deegan, good to meet him. All good. Stay safe. Back tomorrow, 1:45. Annette Egan produce. Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Summer's here. Spruce up your bedroom for less with our sizzling summer sale offers at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.